Back when the interstate system was built in the 50s, they looked for what they called the desire lines, where a road could most easily be built and touch as many communities as possible. The most desired of the desire lines was to build next to old Route 66. Well, our gravel bike riding friend Bruce Morser finds himself holed up in a motel right there on Route 66, an aging vestige of days gone by. The motel, not Bruce. He's there with his riding buddy King Harold as they wait out bad weather in New Mexico along the Great Divide Trail.
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66. It winds from Chicago to L.A. More than 2,000 miles all the way. Get your kicks on Route 66.
I'm Jeff Hoyt. This is Hoytus Interruptus. And welcome to what might be, could be, our final installment of Bruce and Bob Ride the Divide. I am here in the downtown studio of Voice of Vashon with Bob Horsley. Hey, Bob.
Good morning, Bruce. Man, Jeff.
Hey, you were just telling me that the brain fog is only just now clearing.
It is just now clearing, exactly.
And from Grants, New Mexico, we've got Bruce Morser and King Harold. Hey, guys.
Hello. Hey, Bill. Hey, Ned. Jeff, Bob. Good morning to you here. We're in lovely Grants,
yeah,
New Mexico.
I've been through Grants on I-40, but it's one of those drive-through towns, so I don't know much about the town itself.
I think bigger than I-40, it's on Route 66.
Oh, wow. That is correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're getting our kicks on Route 66.
Are you staying in one of those famous Route 66 motels with all the crazy neon?
Yes. It once had crazy neon. We're staying at the Sands Motel, and you can tell that most of the neon is gone, and it is maybe a shell of its former self, but here we are. It's a little bit bleak. Not our most sumptuous accommodation.
Yeah, the way we arrived yesterday, it was, the rain was just pouring down, and all the traffic kind of passing on the highway. So it was a kind of relief to come here and get a dry place to stay.
Yeah. Great.
So what's the count? How many miles down are you at this point?
We're at 2,350. Now, these are my miles. Harold actually has more miles in him because he started up in Canada. So I'm only speaking for what would have been Bob and my trip. Harold's been on the road for 8,000 miles now. No, he's been on the road for...
I haven't counted, actually. But it's a bit from Banff down to the border, so...
So you started up in Banff?
I started in Banff, yes.
Oh, yeah. Man. Okay. Well, you might be looking forward to the end of the trip even more than Bruce. Or are you guys looking forward to the end of the trip? Are you feeling the barn?
That's an interesting question. It is. I think that will reveal as we talk about how things generally went this week. Where am I done with the adventure? No, but sometimes conditions can be rather challenging. Maybe that's a good starting spot. This was a week of challenges. And I realize that we call in and we say this all the time, but it's true. New Mexico is hard. It is easily the hardest state.
Definitely. I mean, we look forward to Colorado, and Colorado was very nice and was so much up and down. But I think definitely New Mexico has been the hardest state.
There are challenges here that you just don't expect. I mean, things that's like, oh, yeah. I mean, like now, anytime you're riding in or out of town, which can be these tiny little things, you got to deal with dogs now.
Oh,
there are
no
dogs that come out and get you. Things like that are a nuisance.
Oh, man. That goes back to your cross-country trip. You guys are dealing with dogs.
So no bears, but dogs.
Yeah, dogs, yeah. I gave up my bear spray weeks ago. I would love to have my bear spray back right now.
Oh,
I would love to have that. But things like challenges that are unexpected. Harold and I, when we last spoke with you guys, we were in Abiquiu, in a really nice place, under these giant old cottonwood trees. And I didn't know this, but cottonwood trees generate these thumbtack-like thorns. Literally getting the bikes to the road, from the road to this place we were staying and back to the road, which is maybe, 200 yards? We each had like 6 or 8 flats.
Oh, my God. Are those the things that are called goat heads or something like that?
They could be.
Yeah.
They're very much like a thumbtack. They sit on the ground with a fat end down and a pointy end up. And the tires are self-sealing, but it's still, you're pulling them out of your tire. And you can see all these bubbles of latex coming up through your tire. Yeah. And you realize, these are flats. We're flatting. So we had to struggle with that kind of stuff.
And then it's a kind of strange. We had that day when we proceed. We had, I think, 4,000 feet climbing. And it was just up and up, and the road was quite rough. So it was a hard day.
It's funny. I was expecting New Mexico to look like the New Mexico when I visited my sister-in-law and, you know, that kind of these sort of wonderful rocky buttes and those sorts of things. But a lot of the New Mexico we've seen so far looks just like Montana.
Oh, really?
We're in the woods. The road is incredibly rough. I think you're talking about what I think is the single hardest day of riding we've had. Harold mentioned this. It was like about 4,000 feet of climbing, but it was a little bit like broken pavement, big chunks of like 4 to 6 foot wide chunks of pavement that are all broken with big gaps in between them. And it's on a hill, and you ride up this, and it is divided by areas of soft sand where your tire dives in, and you struggle with that. And it's this back and forth between those two forms that are just, it was brutal. I've never ridden anything like it.
Wow.
Yeah, it is so much harder than anything we had ridden.
So was this tough day the day after Abiquiu that you're talking about, the 4,000?
And we met the guy in a pickup truck at the top of the pass, and he said, okay, are you going down the canyon? We said, yes. Then you will see the roughest roads you have ever seen. And he was right. We have to walk down the bicycle for some stretches.
Yeah, we walked down the hill.
Yeah.
Where this is literally like the car transmissions and brake drums. You just can't believe you're supposed to ride through this stuff. Well, I think what it boils down to is this is called the Great Divide Mountain Bike Route. And the stuff we've been experiencing lately is mountain bike riding.
Yeah, wow.
And we are used to, most people come to this thing with the idea that it's gravel bike riding, but this is mountain bike riding. It's a little bit like the analogy would be like taking the family station wagon and driving it up to the top of a ski hill in the summertime. It's not really made for that. There's no suspension. There's none of the super small gears that mountain bikes have. And we're carrying 50 pounds on the bike. So it was, just incredibly brutal stuff, but we chipped away at it and slowly got the thing done. It was a hard go, though. This is probably worth describing a little bit because, I 2 years ago, I wouldn't have known the difference either. But a mountain bike is designed to go over extremely rough terrain, and it's aided with full suspension on the front fork and also on the rear triangle, and this incredible shock absorbing helps get you over these really steep bumps and lumps without losing control of the bike. And the handlebars are really wide, and you can actually get the seat out of your way. You can drop the seat down and some other things like that that really make it possible. And gravel bikes are really bikes that are designed to go over lots of rough terrain, meaning, like the square potatoes we've talked about, and down to gravel, and cover big distances while carrying a heavy load. And the two are very different sports. And all of a sudden, we went from what we thought we were doing, which was the Great Divide ride, into mountain bike riding, which is super hard. Everybody you talk to, everyone's like, oh my God, did you go up that ramp, this big volcanic ramp that we've been talking about? And so you just realize, okay, it's one of the real anomalies of the trip. And it lasts a good long time. And there seems to be a lot of it in New Mexico so far. But that's what we're doing.
If you were to take a stab at estimating how many of these 2,000 plus miles you've actually been on foot, up steep trails or unrideable terrain, what would your guess be?
I think you'd have to say, if you're looking for a percentage, that would be impossible. But over the last couple of days, Harold has, his bike is closer to a mountain bike. He has a very, very low gear, which I simply don't have. So he can go slower, and which is kind of the key. You've got to be able to go slow. So I walk more than he does. But in total, I've walked an easy 30 miles on the terrain.
And as you get closer to the end of this ride, does it feel as though it's trying to throw its toughest terrain at you? It's like, I'll show you. You're never going to see the end of this ride. Are you getting that feeling?
Yes. Yeah. That's a pretty accurate statement. All those great scenic highway photos of these wonderful gravel roads disappearing through the mesas and so on. We haven't seen anything like that.
Because I remember on your cross-country trip, you and Bob really started picking up the pace toward the end. Long days, lots of miles. And I don't know if that was because of a deadline or you were just smelling the barn, but it seems like speeding things up on this trip here toward the end is just really not an option.
Yeah, we've been holding the best for last here, Jeff. We've been talking about dull stuff like the rough road. And yes, Jeff, you're right that we have been knocked back in speed. It's very hard to make ground. But in the last, several days now, we've encountered rain. And rain changes everything. Where if you're up north, where the roads are more gravelly and firm, it's wet, it's miserable. You know, you ride through that. Harold and I have ridden through a bunch of rain, and we've actually had a lot of fun coming down some of the passes in the rain. It's just, you know, it's kind of a lark. But now all of a sudden, the rain itself is fine. I don't mind having my face out in the rain, but the roads turn into this quicksand mud, and then you really can't make any progress, and there's nowhere to camp, and all those kinds of things just add up to the problem.
Yeah, and as Bruce said, to camp in this mud is just really a problem.
Have you encountered the peanut butter mud that's just impossible to get off the tires and your feet?
Yes.
We had heard people talk about.
The last 2 days were kind of interesting. We were in Cuba, kind of a struggling town, sort of hard. We had a bad time there, even finding food one night and that kind of stuff. So we were a little bit down in Cuba until we left. So this is 2 days ago. We had a great breakfast, wonderful place that sort of set our mood straight again and felt much more kindly to Cuba as we headed out. But instead of taking the usual route for the Great Divide, there are alternative tracks that are mapped out for you in case conditions get bad, and conditions were bad. So we took the alternate route. There would have been impossible to take the standard route. That would have just been nothing but peanut butter mud everywhere. So one of the routes put us on they're narrow one-lane highways, but they are paved. The grass and bushes growing up through the edges, that kind of thing. But it's still pretty rideable. It's actually kind of nice. And we rode this alternate route around this big area, which is a lot like the Great Basin that we talked about before. And it's a two-day ride that is divided, fortunately, by this great place called the Chaco Trading Center.
Yeah.
What was your impression of that, Harold?
That was a strange place. You know, they had this, it was a gas station with fences around it. And they said, okay, we closed the fences at 8 o'clock, so you will be safe. But we were also locked in there, like in a prison.
Oh, really?
It was a very bizarre thing. We're out in the middle of the desert here. And the folks at this trading center, this is a place, it's kind of a regional thing. It's laundromat, you know, washing machines, and terrible food, you know, absolutely just, you know, the raunchiest microwave food, but it's edible. And nice people who run it, really, really nice people. And they're just like, yeah, here, pitch your tent. That photo I sent you the other night, Bob, of the rail car, that's the Chaco Trading.
Yeah, I love it.
You sent us that picture the other night of your tent next to a box car, which hearkened images for me of Woody Guthrie. And given that beard that you're rocking right now, Bruce, has anyone confused you with a vagrant?
Yeah, we pretty much look the part. I mean, it's all blend. This is kind of the lowest lifestyle I've had, I think, ever, but it's all in getting there. And, you know, it's things equal. When you're like the Chaco Trading Center, everyone's equal. It's a pretty rough and tumble place. Like Harold said, they literally lock you in with the gas pumps at night so that nothing happens to you, which it's intimidating. Yes. What would happen?
What would happen?
The place is also full of dogs, too.
Yeah. Oh, great. More dogs. On both trips that you and Bob went on, you were particularly struck by the people that you met along the way. On this trip, though, the stories that both you guys have told about the people you've encountered along the way, it seems to go a little deeper. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's right.
Most of the people are just wonderful, and they are so helpful.
And it's, you often find, even if there's somebody who's not as wonderful, there's somebody there who's more wonderful and helps you through, like the waitress at the breakfast spot the other day, which is just kind of like, it just turned our attitude around on Cuba and just made the thing pleasant. And when we were last night, we got from the Chaco Trading Center into Grants, and we should talk more about that because that was quite a ride. And we found a Mexican restaurant, and it was clear that the probably the person in charge wanted us out of there. It's like, you're done. And the sweet waitress is like, no, we'll take care of you. We'll take care of you. And kept bringing us food and stuff. So it's that kind of like balance of even the people that are grumpy are counter-opposed by people that are just being extra sweet. So it's all a positive.
Seems like to me the difference is on the first ride, it was passing encounters with people. On this ride, you seem to have connected on a deeper level to actually hear stories. And you've told so many great stories on this trip. Is there something different about this trip that is pulling these experiences out of the ether? Or is it just the circumstances? Is it just the part of the country you're in?
I think it's the remoteness a little bit, too, of this trip versus our other trip. Our other trip, we were on roads most of the time, you know, or all the time. And this trip has been, the variety of the route has dictated a more remote, you know, encounters with people, which I think become more intimate when you have that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're certainly all at your very barest, minimal kind of presence where you're all pretty equal and everyone's struggling with something. And I think you're right, Bob. I think that does bring out these close connections, and there's time. We're not immediately back on the bike, or we have chance to chat, or we have people literally physically help us to the point where, oh, okay, that's absolutely crucial. So I think that does make these connections tighter. And it's been amazing. It's been, I think, the single best thing about the trip. These curveballs keep coming at us. Where yesterday we left the Chaco Training Center, we knew it was a long day. We knew we'd have the better part of 70, 75 miles to ride to get to Grants. And it was very pleasant. I mean, actually, the riding is nice and we're going along, but you could see that there are these big storms and we could hear thunder, and these storms that are getting pushed across these mesas were obviously creating disturbance and forcing thunder and lightning out of them and big rain clouds. And we were able to kind of like navigate between these big storms. But then ultimately we got nailed twice where we stopped, we put on the full rain gear. And you just press into it, and you just, you know, you get, make sure your lights are on in the back, and you, there are a couple of passing cars, which are worrisome, but you just push into this thing. And then we were finally descending, long, beautiful descent, gradual descent down into Grants, and we just run into a downpour. Harold mentioned this, and we're riding along this highway with cars everywhere, and it's getting dark. It's just a miserable downpour. And you realize, like, okay, that's it. Now we need the help of somebody, kind of. And then people always will kind of show up. Like the guy who ran this small little hotel was very nice to us, and there was a confusion about what we were supposed to get. But they're all pulling for us. It's all very, very, very nice.
As you close in on the end of this ride, are you finding yourself in a more reflective space about the totality of the experience?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Harold should mention this. This rain, and it's a lot of rain, and over many days, and this is a real game changer. So Harold and I are sitting around the motel room today. We don't know what's going to happen next. We don't know what's possible. We have no idea where I'm going to be in an hour. And everything's up in the air all of a sudden, because progress down the trail may be just totally impossible. So it's just like in the spring when they closed the trail down to wildfires, the trail may be closed down to this deep rain. So we don't know. Harold, where are you in this?
Well, this trip has been, for me actually, it's like reading a book where you start and you have all these pages and you turn the pages around and now we see the end of the book. Yeah, this is what the Great Divide is all about. I mean, it's a kind of a long, long ride in very remote conditions. And I think it's been a really good experience.
I think the book analogy is good because you never know. It seems to me the overriding sort of theme throughout the part of the trip that I was on, it sounds like you're still describing it this way, is never knowing from moment to moment what's going to come up next. And you never know until you turn the page what that's going to be. I mean, you can be experiencing just miserable conditions one moment, and the next moment somebody's going to help you and you're going to have an incredible meal, or something good's going to happen, or vice versa. I mean, with me, I got sick and I had no idea that was going to happen, but it happened. To me, the trip just reinforced the axiom of just living in the moment and just experiencing each moment fully as it comes. There's not a whole lot you can do about it, but just be there for it, you know?
You sort of have to keep your cool. You're right, yeah. Bob, where it's like at this point, I mean, just you're talking to us this morning and we really don't know what's going to happen next. I mean, Harold's got travel issues to get back to Norway and his flight he found out was canceled. So he's got to deal with that. And then when and where, and if the road is completely impassable, I think I'm unwilling to spend another week in this motel we're in now. So it's like, well, where do we go? What is the next thing? And you can normally in life, you can get all bent out of shape about those kinds of things. But I think it's this kind of like, okay, well, something will come out of it. I know where there's a good Mexican restaurant and a nice waitress.
In the meantime, let's go eat Mexican.
When I've been gone for a while, I think the longest I've ever been away is 3-4 weeks. I start to miss things. And I'd like to ask you both, Bruce and Harold, if that's starting to bubble up for you guys. What are you starting to miss? What are you looking forward to getting back to when this ride is over?
That's a good question, actually. I think this has been a very long journey, both physically and mentally. When I started this trip, I didn't really know what to expect. But it has been so many impressions, and I think I need some time, actually, to calm down and think of it, what I have been through. It's hard to say, actually.
Yeah, the whole trip has changed markedly for me. That's a little bit of a different topic. To answer your question, Jeff, I tend to call up the things of home when I need them. You know, I'll be like yesterday when the conditions just got terrible, just pressing into this, teeth gritted kind of thing. I literally will think about sitting on the back patio the way Julie and I do virtually every morning with a cat in my lap. Julie sits there with a cat and I sit with a cat and we just look at the day, look at the harbor evolve. And I can go there easily in my mind and I'll realize I'll be back to that sometime. And it is very much a relief. And it's like, okay, that's fine. You know, I'm not dying out here. So I'll just chug along with that. So I do think about that. I think about some of the projects I'd like to work on, things that are interesting to me. Yesterday, I spent a bunch of time in my head creating a big installation in my mind that was just personal reasons, construction and imagery together. And I could make the miles melt away just by sitting there and making this model in my head move around and look at it and figuring out how do I do it. So I think about those kinds of things too.
Are you still painting?
The painting has stopped. There's just now picture you get to.
Are you taking pictures at least?
Yeah.
Good.
You figure you break camp, you get up, there's no light and so on. You're lucky to get out of the tent by 7:30, and then you're putting everything away and so on. So you're maybe getting on the road like at 9, and then like the days we've described, these are super long days that you're very lucky to get to the end of the day in time to cook something, eat something, set up everything, and then get into bed and it's dark. Yeah. So the idea of painting is like, where? when would I do that? And there have been a few shorter days where I thought, oh, this, I would normally have stopped here, but I'm not going to stop Harold out in the middle of everything. It's like, Harold, go cool your heels for an hour and a half while I get my pink kid out here.
Different dynamic. Yeah.
Different thing, and that I am taking pictures, and I have every intention of doing paintings, but the plein air paintings for the last 3 weeks of the trip will have disappeared. I physically can't do it anymore. Too damn cold.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised by your answer, though, because I kind of always got the feeling that that was sort of a shared experience for you and Bob. And yeah. You guys would pull the paints out together at the end of the day or at the beginning of another, and once Bob had to check out, I was thinking, okay, we're going to see a lot fewer paintings from here on out.
I wanted to teach King Harold how to paint.
Yeah, but as Bruce says, the days are just filled up with bicycle riding. I'm writing a blog. To write a blog is hard because I have to do it in the tent with a headlamp. The days are just too short, actually.
I would love to get a picture of myself with my paints set up, sitting in my tent with my headlamp on.
Inside the tent, painting.
Yeah. My water bucket gone, so on.
Well, I guess it's a little difficult to speculate as to whether this is our final conversation from the road or not. You guys have some weather issues that could slow you down. We could be into early, mid next week, and you could still be on the trail, it sounds like.
Jeff, let me put it this way. The weather issues may have simply stopped the ride, like in the springtime when the Great Divide riders simply couldn't continue because of wildfires. It's just like, sorry, that's over. Mm-hmm. One of the things that Harold and I have encountered a lot, we've come across a lot of Great Divide hikers. And at first I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, you're a little bit far south or a little bit in the wrong place for you at this time of the year. And we find out that these were all the hikers that got closed out of sections of the trail, and they're coming back and mopping up. Oh. And they're like, oh, we lost the peace between Cuba and Grants, so we'll walk that now. They have this weird life of like stitching together these little pieces of a route, these erratic pieces that they're putting together. So it's very much the kind of thing that when we started the route, this is maybe the most important thing to me. Bob, you and I very much had this notion that, oh, we're going to start at a border and then we finish at a border. And it was like our cross-country ride.
Yeah.
It was like you start in Gloucester, Massachusetts, because it was about as far east as we could get. And that's where my mom lived. And then where are we going to finish? Well, we're going to finish on Vashon Island. You know, we're going to dip the rear tire in the Atlantic and we're going to dip the front tire in the Pacific. And you get on this ride, you realize the idea that you're on this linear route is not that important. It becomes much more important that you are on a daily basis, you are on the divide, this giant dome-like divide where one raindrop is going to flow west to the Pacific and one raindrop is going to flow east to the Atlantic or the Gulf. It's this giant, big thing. So this more east to west is profound. This sense of the divide has become profound. And the idea that, well, we got to scramble to get to this town, or we got to get this finish line, or so on, that has become utterly unimportant. Harold and I, and you and I, Bob, had this really big experience of being in this remote divide, on this divide, and encountering all of that. And it's lifted me out of the linear thinking completely of like, oh, I got to get here. I got to get there. It's not there. So if the conditions have forced us to call it quits or to reduce what our expectations are, that's just like, oh, that's what it is. And that will be good. We'll still have spent 10 weeks out here chipping away at it.
It's still good to do the planning, but it's impossible to follow the plan, actually.
Yeah. So to your question, Jeff, is this our last phone call from the road? I have no idea. I really don't know. We've got phone calls and texts we have to send ahead on the trail to find people who have any indication. I mean, most of the indications we've had from people are the roads are impassable, but we'll keep chipping at it to see if there's a way around it kind of thing. That's kind of what we're doing. Yeah.
Well, we will remain curious at this end to see what happens next. Sounds like it's pretty much a big question mark, and maybe we'll have another conversation next week, and maybe we won't, and we'll just hear that you've wrapped up the ride and look forward to kind of a wrap-up conversation back here in the studio when you get back to Vashon.
Yes, I have. It could be either way. If anyone thinks like, oh, that's too bad, it's ending in a storm or something like that, it's like, oh no, that's not a problem. That's that. It's unpleasant, but it's like part of this glorious adventure. Yeah. It's kind of almost adds romance to it if that's the way it wraps up. Yeah. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for all the stories and all the perspective, Bruce and Harold and Bob. Thanks for coming in to hang out with these guys. Look forward to whatever happens next.
We'll let you know. Good, that's for sure.
Good luck, guys. Hang in there.
Thank you, bud.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll talk soon.
Thanks for the call, Jeff.
Okay. Take care, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Hoytus Interruptus. I'm Jeff Hoyt. Right after we recorded this conversation, Bruce told Bob and me that the storms have turned most of the rest of the Great Divide Trail to mud, rendering it pretty much impassable. So the guys have pivoted to paved road and are still making their way south toward the Mexican border. Bruce will end the ride in a few days when his niece, who lives down there, will pick up both him and his bike. We'll check in with Bruce one more time while King Harold heads home to Norway. So in appreciation for keeping Bruce and Bob company out there, we'll play Harold off with the King of the Blues, B.B. King, with an able assist from Eric Clapton as they cover John Hiatt's Riding with the King.
I dreamed I had a good job and I got well paid.
Play this thing until the day I die.